Today on Maine Calling, what we can learn from squid. Squid are often described as unusual, fascinating, amazing, and for good reason. There are all sorts of fun squid facts. Did you know that their powerful jet propulsion makes them the fastest marine invertebrate? That their huge eyes work like cameras? And that they can glow and flash to communicate with each other? I'm Cindy Hahn. Today we learn all about the squid found in Maine's coastal waters. Researchers have long studied squid physiology. In fact, studies of their neurons have been vital to modern neuroscience and medicine. Squid research has even led to development of robotic arms. And then there's the demand for squid as food or bait. We'll learn about recreational squid fishing and whether Maine might ever have a commercial squid fishery. The surprising role of squid. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine. Now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. The octopus gets a lot of attention these days in books and movies, but its cephalopod cousin, the squid, may have a leg up or tentacle up in terms of its value to science. Today, we'll learn all about this marine creature and how they benefit humans. Joining me, Dr. Michelle Staudinger is Associate Professor in the School of Marine Sciences with the University of Maine Darling Marine Center. Owen Nichols is Director of Marine Fisheries Research with the Center for Coastal Studies in Provincetown, Massachusetts. And Jessica Blaylock is Fish Biologist at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center with NOAA Fisheries. That's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you think of squid? Have you ever seen one in the Gulf of Maine? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Owen, start us off. There's a lot of fun facts about squid. They're really quite amazing. So tell us about some of the traits that are unique to squid.
I mean, they're really fascinating creatures. You know, they kind of live fast and die young. The species of squid that we encounter the most around us here on Cape Cod and in the Gulf of Maine, long fin squid and short fin squid, we assume that they only live about a year to a year and a half. So they're relatively short lived. You can have several cohorts of squid out there at once, you know, and generationally they grow really, really fast, faster when it's warmer. They're voracious predators. They can communicate with their skin. I mean, they're just fascinating creatures. You know, I could talk about them all day. My focus on them tends to be thinking about when and where they go with respect to environmental factors and what that means for our fisheries.
Yeah, and we want to hear more about that. But just some of the other weird things that I read, like their eyes. Tell us about their eyes. They're really huge, first of all, proportionately, right?
Yeah, in the case of longfin squid, which is one of the species that's studied the most in that context, you know, they're certainly used in a laboratory setting down at the Marine Biological Laboratory in Woods Hole, and folks study the eyes, the optic nerve. They have polarized vision. If any of you have spent time on the water, you know, you wear polarized sunglasses to see better. It gets rid of some of the light that comes in from different directions and lets you see what's right in front of you. That can make them very effective predators underwater. They can also, they have these sort of mirror-like cells called iridophores. So if light's reflecting off of them, they can actually control the direction that light is reflected. So it may well be that they can signal one another in a directional way because of that. That's all work that's been done out at the Marine Biological Laboratory by Dr. Roger Hanlon and his colleagues, but fascinating stuff.
Yeah, like you said, they're just amazing. So, Michelle, what about their habitat? Are they living near shore in the Gulf of Maine? Are they further out?
Yeah, different species of squid live in a variety of different habitats throughout the Gulf of Maine. We do have species that come inshore, even into our large river estuaries. The longfin inshore squid spawns inshore. Whereas the northern shortfin squid is typically found more offshore in pelagic waters. Both species occur across the continental shelf. We typically see shortfin squid in even deeper waters down off of the slope. We actually do have other species of squid that inhabit some of our deeper mesopelagic and bathypelagic environments that are quite diverse, more gelatinous, and more poorly known in general.
And who eats squid and what do they eat? This whole predator-prey relationship out there in the water.
So really, almost all of our megafauna like to eat squid. They're a very nutritious source of prey. So marine mammals, all different species of toothed whales and seals consume squid. Every fish that's a predatory fish that you can think of probably eats squid at some point in their life. And they're also cannibalistic, which is
Whoa.
really fascinating. So they will prey on each other, especially if they're in high density aggregations.
Oh, I didn't know that. Jessica, a real basic question actually for you for starters is just I mentioned the octopus at the top. What's the difference between an octopus and a squid?
Well, when you look at them, you can really see the difference. The octopus is very that traditional big shape with all the tentacles, and a squid is more is smaller. It's more like a longitudinal shape, like a tube. It also has tentacles and arms, but it's different also in socially. It's more found in bigger groups, where octopus a lot of times like to be alone. Those are the main differences. And then commercially, at least in our area, squid represent a really important fishery, while octopus don't.
Yeah, okay. Well, they're both. I heard something, some reference to squid as the ice cream cone of the sea because they're conical shaped, kind of like a cone, but also because people like to eat them. So, all kinds of
Yeah.
funny nicknames for squid out there. Let's go on the line now to Joseph Thompson. Dr. Thompson is professor of biology at Franklin and Marshall College, and he's a longtime summer researcher at UMaine's Darling Marine Center. Thanks for calling, Professor Thompson.
Oh, you're welcome, Cindy. Thank you for having me on.
So our panelists have mentioned the two kinds of squid that are in Maine's coastal waters predominantly. How do you differentiate the longfin squid and the shortfin squid?
So practically, when we're out on lighted docks and piers at night trying to catch them, because we work on them as our research animals back at the Darling Marine Center, the shortfin squid are a lot faster, typically, when they're sort of poking around near shore waters, either hunting for prey or looking for mates and things like that. Also, the shortfin squid are a bit darker red when we see them in the water column, whereas the longfin squid, when you're looking at them from the top, tend to be a little bit lighter colored and don't quite swim as quickly. Also, when they're in groups, the shortfin squid tend to move in much more coordinated movements, almost like schooling. And you can see that on occasion with the longfin squid, but typically they're more doing what we call shoaling, which is they're kind of loosely aggregated together and moving around.
Okay, well, tell us about the day in the life of a squid. What do they do all day?
I wish I knew, actually. I wish I knew for sure. Because it's something that we puzzle over all the time. But at least as little guys, so when they hatch out, they're about the size of a grain of rice.
Wow.
And they are planktonic, and so they're sort of drifting around with the water, and they're eating, tiny crustaceans, little larval fishes, and getting eaten by, I think, just about everything. And as they grow and develop, they start tackling bigger prey. Probably being eaten by yet even more different kinds of animals that find them quite tasty. We're not quite sure. Your other panelists could probably speak this much more than I can, but we're not really quite sure exactly where they go at all stages of life. We know that they come, at least the longfin squid we see in nearshore waters for breeding in the summers. They can also breed, I guess, in the wintertime. But between tiny hatchlings, and when they get to be sort of juveniles and adults, we're really not quite sure exactly where they are and what they're doing.
Well, you've been coming to Maine for decades to study squid. What is it that you're looking at with your research, and what have you learned?
So the thing that we're looking at most recently is we study the biomechanics of locomotion in these animals. And so I'd say the most interesting thing recently we have discovered is that squid swim with different gaits. So just as, you know, any of us or listeners, you know, humans typically have three gaits, right? You can walk. Eventually, if you try to walk really fast, you have to transition into a jog because you can't go quite as fast as you can with a walk. And then you can jog for a certain up to a certain speed, then you really have to transition into a run. And it turns out that that transition point happens when the slower gait, when moving at that slower gait, is energetically too costly. And so it's actually cheaper to switch from a walk to a jog at a certain speed and then from a jog to a run. Well, squids swim using jets, right? So they use jet locomotion. And it turns out they also have different gaits. And this is work that I've done with colleagues, Jan Bartal, who's at Old Dominion University, and Paul Kruger, who's at North Texas University. And what we discovered is that squid actually have two different kinds of jet. They have a sort of low-speed jet that has very high efficiency, and then a much faster jet that they use for getting out of town, you know, if a seal or a striper is on their heels, or if they're trying to rush up and capture a herring or another a little shrimp or something like that.
So this whole jet propulsion that they do is what really sets them apart. They can go really fast, right? Are they truly the fastest marine invertebrate in the sea?
Boy, it's tempting to say yes to that. I think so. I'm struggling to think of something that would be faster, but yeah, they can be lightning fast. And what's interesting is because there's so much drag when they're swimming underwater, if they emerge from the water, they actually accelerate and pick up speed. So there are some species of squid, not so much the ones that we have locally here in Maine, although they can do it, that are called flying squid. And they actually will emerge from the water. They'll pick up speed and cover more distance for a given jet than they can underwater. And so we think that perhaps they're using it in the same way that flying fish do, which is to cover greater distance over a given time or to escape from potential predators.
Well, what's interesting about the squid research is like, oh, that's all fine and good, but what's the application of knowing that? And I understand that a lot of the squid research in the past has had a huge impact on what we know about human health and neuroscience. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's actually a really interesting story. You know, as somebody who is a scientist and grew up wanting to be a scientist, but having a family who were definitely not scientists, my extended family, they always ask, what do you do again? No one quite understood. But it's not an overstatement to say that our most common local species of squid here, the intra longfin squid, rests at the absolute foundation of modern neuroscience and medicine. And so, you know, as the listeners know, most listeners know, right, neurons are the cells in the nervous system that can sense things, they integrate and process information, they can cause parts of your body to do stuff, right? For example, they control your muscles. But the problem with figuring out how neurons in a human or any other vertebrate works is that they're really tiny. They're 10 to 50 micrometers in diameter, right? So that's about half the thickness of a piece of photocopy paper. So they're too tiny to easily make measurements of their function. Now, squid mostly also have tiny neurons that are comparable in size to those of humans, and therefore they're equally difficult to study. But in the 1930s, a British scientist named J.Z. Young, who was working at the Marine Biological Laboratories in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, discovered that some species of squid, including our local species, have gigantic neurons. So these neurons are upwards of 1,000 micrometers. That's a millimeter. That's about the diameter of a piece of uncooked thin spaghetti. These neurons are so gigantic that allowed he and later people to insert electrodes into them to figure out exactly how they generate electric fields, how that electric signaling changes with different sorts of contexts. The other neat thing they were able to do, because these cells are so huge, is you could dissect one out of a squid and then take a toothpick and start rolling the cell around the toothpick and squeeze out the cytoplasm. So the cytoplasm is the sort of gelatinous inner liquid of any cell. And they could take that cytoplasm, or so much of it, they could measure what the chemical constituents were, what proteins were present. And so both the physiological measurements and those chemical measurements allowed people to understand exactly how these neurons worked. And that then later on led to the development of understanding of neurodegenerative diseases, It led to the development of different kinds of anesthesia, of pain medications, of how muscles are controlled by the nervous system, what happens when those neurons stop functioning properly. So it's not an overstatement, again, to say that our local species of squid rests at the foundation of modern medicine.
Wow. So we should all be very thankful to squid, right? That's amazing.
Exactly. That's my approach.
That's your bottom line. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for calling. Dr. Joe Thompson is a biology professor at Franklin and Marshall, and he does research with UMaine's Darling Marine Center. Oh, and Joe had mentioned the sort of flying fish type squid that that can really move like that. I heard there was something captured on video in your area of Cape Cod of a whole bunch of squid chasing fish. Was that, what was going on with that, and why did that go so viral?
Yeah, so relatively recently, I mean, it seems like forever ago now, the summer's flying by, but we had a large number of short fin squid come up into shoal water, shallow water around Cape Cod Bay. You know, Cape Cod is kind of unique because of its shape, its bathymetry, you know, the underwater topography. We have these expansive tidal flats, you know, relatively shoal water, immediately adjacent to relatively deep water. And so we often see this with a variety of species, not just squid, but schooling fish as well, where if they come up on these flats in high abundance, either being chased by predators or chasing prey, they will often get stranded on the beach. And we've certainly seen this with short fin squid over the years. We saw it in relatively large numbers recently, this early summer. And it certainly got a lot of attention. I think a lot of folks aren't used to seeing that. The last time it happened in very large numbers was probably in the 1970s. I can think of a few times more recently where we've had relatively small numbers of squid come up on the beach, but enough to make the news. But nothing on the scale of what happened early this summer or back in the 1970s, where they were actually using aircraft to count them because there were such high densities of them stranded on the beaches. So it really is fascinating. Obviously, folks aren't used to seeing that, so they take videos of it, they post it on social media, and that some of those posted actually go viral. It was really neat for folks to see that, because a lot of folks just don't get to see squid unless they're fishing for them or going to aquaria, and even then it's rare that you see them in aquaria as well. So I think it was for a lot of folks their first time seeing them, and in many cases touching them if they were up on the beach. They did, many of them ultimately did die on the beach as the tide went out. But, you know, just a few inches of water, you'll see these squid still chasing smaller bait fish. And that's a phenomenon we've seen out here on Cape Cod for a long time.
That must be a sight to see. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Our topic today, squid and why they're important. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. What to know about squid, including why they matter to researchers, to the field of medicine, and as food as well. My guests are Owen Nichols. He's Director of Marine Fisheries Research at the Center for Coastal Studies in Cape Cod. Jessica Blaylock is a fish biologist at NOAA's Northeast Fisheries Science Center. And Michelle Staudinger is Associate Professor of Marine Sciences at UMaine's Darling Marine Center. Share your comments and questions. Are you curious about how squid behave? Have you ever fished or jigged for squid? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Michelle, I just wanted to turn to you because Owen was talking about that phenomenon that happened at Cape Cod. Do we see those kinds of strandings in Maine as well, of squid all over the beach?
Well, recently I've had some colleagues from Fish and Wildlife Service who manage seabird colonies on multiple islands throughout the Gulf of Maine. And just last week, I received some photographs and accounts from these seabird managers of a squid being washed up on the shorelines of some of the colonies in the Downeast area. And so when I took a look at those photographs, I was immediately thinking about the event that had occurred down in Cape Cod. And was surprised to find that we were seeing short fin squid also being washed up on the shorelines of some of these islands. And I did some poking around on social media on some fishermen's social media sites just to see what people were reporting. And it turns out that we have been having these smaller stranding events of shortfin squid in different locations throughout Maine. Not everybody gives their location of where they're fishing, but I've seen some photographs here and there. So it's been making me think that there may be some special environmental conditions this summer that might be causing these larger events further south and maybe smaller events further north. Because, oh, and definitely correct me if I'm wrong, but we don't typically see shortfin squid coming in along the beaches and immediate coastlines in this way.
What do you think of it? Is that unusual?
I would agree with that. I think, when they're abundant inshore, we're of course much more likely to see that. But I think Michelle's right that the driver of that has to be some sort of offshore oceanography that's causing these distributional shifts. And one of the interesting things that's going on around Cape Cod is quite often we'll see one species or the other, or sometimes both in abundance. But right now, both species seem to be in relatively high abundance around Cape Cod. And quite often it seems like we're dominated by one species or the other. So that's really interesting to see. People are catching longfin squid on rod and reel as shortfin squid have been stranding on the beaches. And it's still going on episodically around where we are in Provincetown as well. So it's really interesting year for sure.
And Michelle, you said, you'd seen pictures and stuff. Do you want people to report this if they see it? Is it useful to you?
I mean, it's really quite interesting. We don't have, I think, a coordinated way to receive these observations. Maybe Jessica might know of a platform that we could receive these observations. But even Joe Thompson and I were just jigging for squid. I think it was a couple of weeks ago, and we were very surprised to actually see a shortfin squid up on the seaweed along the rocks as we were jigging. We were not expecting to see shortfin squid. We were expecting to be catching longfin squid in Christmas Cove off the Bristol Peninsula. So, yeah, we didn't. We've just sort of been collecting, I think, this information and these observations, and I don't know.
Sounds like a citizen science project in the works right
Perhaps.
there. All right, let's go to Hannah McDonald on the line. Hannah is Director of Policy Innovation with the Maine Coast Fishermen's Association. Thanks for calling, Hannah.
Thanks, Cindy. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, so we've been talking about how, squid are out there, and fishermen in Maine, I know, encounter them as they're out on the water. But at the same time, squid is not a commercial fishery in Maine, right?
Well, fishermen in Maine aren't going out with their trawl nets to target squid. It's more of an incidental fishery in the Gulf of Maine. So that means that they're allowed to land them if they're catching them more as a bycatch. So if they're out there looking for other types of ground fish like cod or haddock and catch them in their net, they're allowed to land them in Maine. However, because it's the boom and bust fishery, the fishermen that I talked to prior to this call said that they haven't seen them in the last 3 years. They're seeing them in abundance now. And because of that, there's not really a market in Maine for them. There's no infrastructure for processing, and the buyers aren't really there because there's a lack of consistent demand. So it's there. You can land them, but it's really hard to get them to people, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so if they just happen to get a few of them, I don't know what a small amount of them would be. Can they just go over to one of the fish markets and say, "Hey, there's also some squid. You want to sell it?" Is that how it works?
Yeah, so actually, just yesterday, to give you an idea of how much we're talking about, 900 pounds were landed in Portland at the Fish Exchange. And the way the Fish Exchange works, it's an auction. So the buyers all sign up at the same time and they all are auctioning off the different species of fish. And the 900 pounds of squid yesterday didn't have any buyers. Sometimes there's about three buyers in Portland, but they're moving just about 50 pounds a week, and they're mostly just freezing it until December. It might be a holiday type market, but yeah, so when they don't sell it, that 900 pounds of squid just ends up going back to the boats, and the fishermen need to figure out what to do with it. You were talking earlier about who eats squid in the ocean. Some guys can end up using it as tuna bait or other bait for different species if it can't be sold on the market.
I understand it's more the short fin that are used as bait and the long fin are what people would eat if they were eating like calamari or something. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's my understanding as well.
Okay. So I guess you've answered. I was going to ask if you think there's an interest or a potential for commercial squid fishing, and it sounds like there could be if there were more of a market. Is that basically the obstacle? I mean, would there ever be one?
Yeah, I think there's a couple factors at play here. So because it's a pretty the abundance of them is unpredictable where the ground fishermen are fishing. For the last 3 years, they haven't really been seeing them until this year. And prior to that, there was like a 5-year period where they were seeing them each year. So if that's a shifting dynamic with the changes in the Gulf of Maine and we start to see more squid consistently, then there could definitely be a market for it. And I think the other side is the shoreside infrastructure piece. Buyers don't necessarily want to buy the squid whole. They want them processed. They want to take out the buyers want them to have the stuff that's not edible taken out. And the only place in New England that you can do that is in New Bedford, where there's a bigger commercial squid fishery. And squid, it's not that they aren't high quality, but being able to ship them down there, they degrade in just a short amount of time. So we would need to have more high volume processing infrastructure in Maine to really make it a Maine fishery.
Well, it seems like it could be lucrative, so maybe sometime that's going to happen in the future. Thanks for giving us a call. That was Hannah McDonald with the Maine Coast Fishermen's Association. Let's go to Torbert calling in now from York. Hi, Torbert. What did you want to talk about today?
Good morning, Cindy and guest. We always seem to speak of nature in terms of exploiting her and her creatures, and I think that we ought to step back and pay a little more respect to the origins of life and not so much at exploiting it. It seems that the cephalopods, of which the squid and the octopus are two, arose in the ancient seas about 540 million years ago. And for 200 million years, they were about the supreme predator in the ocean. And I think that this quote tells you something that I would like more attention paid to. Dr. Sidney Brenner, the founding president of Japan's Okinawa Institute of Science and Technology, considered these cephalopods the first intelligent beings on the planet. And in terms of exploitation in the pelagic realm, drift netting, highly organized drift netting is the main means of capturing these squid, and they rise up on a daily basis in a column that has been called the largest commute on the planet. They go in a water column, rising up at night as many as 2,000 feet. But everybody and everything gets caught in that net, and I'd hate to see us adopting any of the methodologies that the rest of the world has been using, because the bycatch is horrendous.
Right.
Dolphins, whales, and et cetera, et cetera. So
right.
A little less exploitation and a little more respect for the oldest intelligent creatures on the planet.
Thank you, Torbert, for sharing your empathetic view towards squid. Jessica, I know in the region that you cover, there is management of commercial fisheries. So how is this, you know, concern that Torbett has expressed balanced out with what's being caught?
Yes. Thank you for the question. So I work in Woods Hole, and our area of concern is all the federal waters from the border to Canada all the way down to Cape Hatteras, North Carolina. So it's a large area. There are two fishery management councils that cover that area, the New England Council and the Mid-Atlantic Council. Both of the squid species that we've been talking about primarily today are managed by the Mid-Atlantic Council. And all the work that NOAA does and that council does is guided by the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which the whole purpose of Magnuson-Stevens is really to foster long-term biological and economic sustainability of fisheries. So to answer the caller, that that is something I'm concerned about too. That's how I got into this line of work, was really concerned about all the species on the planet and conservation and sustainable use. So those are guiding principles for what we do here at NOAA and our fisheries in Woods Hole. So hopefully that helps. But there's, I just wanted to come back a little bit to just what kind of how the fisheries works and what we were talking about before about the prospects of a fishery in Maine. Is a lot of the ability to have a commercial fishery, as was discussed, depends on the demand in the market onshore, but also on where and when the squid are. And as we touched on earlier in the show, the distribution of these squid doesn't necessarily expand very close to shore on the Gulf of Maine. So that's part of why there's not a lot of fishing in that area. Is the primary areas are really off Rhode Island and Cape May, New Jersey, and that's where the majority of the commercial landings occur. So I would say to develop a market in Maine, in addition to what's already been discussed, there would have to be movement of the stocks, which we'll see how things go with the ocean warming. Things are moving around, but right now, compared to the distribution of the stock, there's just not a lot along the coast of Maine compared to everywhere else.
Yeah, so there's nobody, no one can control that. It's where they are is where they are.
Yeah, you can't fish for them if they're not here. And yeah. That's part of why Ilex has kind of boom and bust years, where some years the water is cold, and there's a lot of this we're looking into, the impact of the oceanographic processes, because they really follow the water. So sometimes if there's a big block of cold water, it'll act as a wall and they just won't come in. And so there's just nothing, they're not coming in to fish. And then there's interactions with other species that might be available that might be more lucrative and make more sense for the fishermen to go after based on their, you know, business decisions. So it's complicated.
Yeah, but yeah, that makes sense though. Thank you. So let's go now to Jesse Snyder. He is an avid recreational squid fisherman, as well as an assistant teacher at the Community School for Place-Based Education on Mount Desert Island. And even better, he is the brother of Maine Public's host and reporter, Ari Snyder. So thanks for calling, Jesse.
Yeah, what a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Listen to that. You even sound kind of like Ari. This is great. and I hear that you had a great night of squid fishing recently. Tell us where you go and how you do it. And is it called jigging or squidding? What do you call it?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I live on Mount Desert Island. Where I go specifically is for me to know and the listeners to find out. And it is called squidding or squid jigging. And you do it right off of, usually it's done right off of a pier, preferably a pier that has a light that's shining down into the water, because the squid are attracted to the light. So, you know, just a usual fishing pole. You use a lure called a squid jig, which is a small lure that's, you know, between 2 and 4 inches long. Some of them are shaped like little shrimp. Some of them are shaped like small fish. And they have two sets of upward-facing barbs on the bottom. So the lure itself hangs perpendicularly in the water, and the squid are attracted to it. Some of them are glow in the dark, and they'll grab onto the tines of the, you know, the upward facing barbs at the bottom. So they're not getting impaled; they're getting tangled. They're grabbing them with their tentacles and, you know, pulling them towards their beak. So once you see a squid, you know, kind of attack the lure, you just give it an upward reel or a jerk, and they often just come right out just like that.
Well, so I actually did try this. I did go squidding off the dock at Town Landing in Falmouth, and did, you know, had success in doing that. And the thing you mentioned about the light, that's a key thing, to have either a really large light or flashlight, or go when it's a full moon, right? What is it? Is it just some primal thing that they rise when they think it's a full moon, or is it because they can just see stuff?
That part I'm not too sure. I imagine it's just because visibility is better, but maybe the expert would know a little bit about that. But yeah, I'm assuming it's just because they are able to see better, and they're just coming in to find prey more easily.
And what do you do with what you catch?
I eat it. So, you know, like the expert said, they don't really like freeze. They deteriorate pretty quickly. So it's best eaten pretty soon after. So I usually eat it, you know, the evening I catch it or the day after. And I do all sorts of things with it. My favorite thing to do is make squid ceviche, which is a delicious way of eating it, or, you know, just sauteing it in some lemon and butter classically. And the other day, my friend who had spent some time in South Africa made a squid dish that he learned about in South Africa, which is squid and peanut sauce, which I had never had before, but that was also delicious.
Most people think of calamari. Do you make it that way as well?
You know, I've done it before. I'm not a huge fan of fried food, but I mean, calamari is delicious, but I like to find more creative and interesting ways of cooking it. Just because, you know, the flavor of the squid itself and the textures is so good when it's cooked more fresh rather than fried, in my humble opinion.
Okay. And one more quick question. When I caught them, at least, they do continue to have this iridescent flashing kind of action even after you've caught them, and you would think that they're dead and gone, but they still continue to flash. Have you seen that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I imagine, you know, since they're freshly caught at that point, that they're, you know, some of their reflexes are still firing, or, you know, it could just be the way that the squid itself is biologically, that kind of action continues onward. I want to also thank Torbett for sharing compassion for these animals, because they are beautiful, they are highly intelligent, and they absolutely deserve the care and respect and just that it's easy to exploit these things, because it's, you know, it's fun to catch. They're beautiful. They taste delicious. But all, you know, all that is to say that, you know, they are just as deserving of respect and care as anything else that we harvest from this earth.
Thank you, Jesse. That was a nice point to make. So that was Jesse Snyder. He's a recreational squid fisherman and a teacher. Thanks for calling in. We do need to take a quick break. We are talking about squid and why they're so interesting. Our phone number is 800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We are finding out why squid are valuable to humans and why they make such fascinating research subjects. Joining me, Jessica Blaylock, is with NOAA's Northeast Fisheries Science Center. Michelle Staudinger is with UMaine's Darling Marine Center. And Owen Nichols is with the Center for Coastal Studies, located at the tip of Cape Cod. Share your comments and questions. What do you want to know about Maine's squid population? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post to Facebook or Instagram, or you can call 1-800-399-3566. I just wanted to follow up about that whole concept where the squid has this very unique sort of flashing iridescent trait. And is that, I understand, a way that they communicate? What is that all about? Michelle?
So squid and other cephalopods can communicate with their skin. It's also a defense mechanism to predators. So they can change the color of their skin to camouflage into the background with different environments and hide. Squid in particular don't have, they're soft bodied, highly nutritious prey resource to many, many predators. So they basically have two options. They can either flee and try to escape their predator, or stay and hide. And so by changing their color patterns of their skin, they can blend into their environment and hopefully either confuse or evade a predator. We haven't talked about this yet, but another defense mechanism that they can utilize is they can ink. And this is common to other cephalopods. This is a really interesting behavior. There's been a lot of research. Inconclusive, I think, in some cases, research on how much of a deterrent the ink is chemically versus how it sort of performs as a smoke screen to distract a predator, and then they go the other way. So, and some people enjoy the ink as part of a culinary I think part of eating them, there's like
Definitely.
squid ink pasta and
Yeah,
sauces
and
and
it
things like
leaves your
that.
lips
So,
black, right, when you eat squid ink
right.
pasta. One of you said you like that. Which one? Somebody, is that your preferred way of eating squid? Somebody on the on one of our panelists? Grilled. Okay. Let's go to Sal calling from Bridgeton. Hi, Sal. Go ahead.
Hi there. Yeah, I appreciate your show. We must take all precautions as much as possible to protect our oceans. The famous oceanographer Sylvia Earle said, "As go the oceans, so go we," which I really firmly believe. I'm wondering, though, have you done any research at all on the effects of geoengineering and the chemicals that drop into the ocean on a daily basis?
Let's see if any of our panelists have looked at that or know of anybody who's looking at that question. No, but Michelle, back to you. There is quite a bit you do on climate impacts on squid. So do you want to just briefly summarize some of that?
Yeah, so as Owen mentioned earlier, squid have this live fast, die young sort of life history strategy. So they're very responsive to changes in the environment. And we've been talking a little bit about how potentially, this this year's ocean conditions potentially is affecting their distribution. So yes, they're particularly sensitive to warming. It can increase their growth rates, which also increases their metabolic rates. So that would lead to them eating more of the things that they use as prey. And yeah, it can change their distribution. It can change their the timing of their different life history events, which we call phenology. Yeah, we've seen their population shift quite a bit due to climate change on a global scale.
And
It
Jessica,
also
while
increases their production, sorry.
right, okay. Jessica, while we're talking about the research, I know there's a little more you wanted to touch upon that NOAA is doing.
Yeah, so just when Michelle was talking about trying to collect the information and the observations that people are seeing, it just made me want to share that there's a lot we're doing at NOAA with partners, stakeholders, including industry and the processors, and just anybody who's interested in watching what's going on with squid. There's a group that we've kind of over the years got to call the Squid Squad. It was developed in 2019, and that was right around research that was going on around the short fin squid, and really what started because people were trying to understand what was going on between the distribution of the species and the oceanographic processes going on. So a lot of the currents, the eddies, the cold pool, a lot of things that happen in the ocean and how that's really guiding the distribution. And over the years that's evolved, and we've been looking at longfin squid, and now we're also looking at mackerel because they're all kind of fit in that same dimension in the ocean. But that's been a great collaboration, and so we're always open to having participation from people who are interested in squid and tuning in. And we've had great collaborations with the industry and the processors and state and academic partners too. So if people are interested, they can reach out.
Okay, good to know. Let's hear from John calling in from Bath. What did you want to talk about, John?
Hi, thank you. I would like to just tell a brief cautionary tale about don't eat too many encephalopods, too many squid. To my knowledge, my son, who's 43, 6 years ago in Linnekin Bay near Booth Bay, caught several dozen shrimp with friends and ate, to our best, to his best recollection, 29 squid in the course of 2.5 days, from Friday night through Sunday. This is again
Wow.
7 years ago. He started hallucinating Sunday night into Monday, and came back to our house in Bath and was seriously, pretty seriously hallucinating. Does not do drugs. Main ranked soccer player, very athletic kid. Mom and dad started to get very concerned. I called the center's CDC in Atlanta. I called the Gulf of Maine Aquarium. I called, I believe I talked briefly to Dora Mills. She just stepped out as state epidemiologist. Maine, should we bring our son to Midcoast Hospital? They said, no, bring him to Maine Med. We called Maine Med ahead. They said, we've never heard of this before. Call CDC. I called the University of Maine. I called Gulf of Maine Research Institute. I called Woods Hole, a couple of calls around Woods Hole. And what I found out a couple of weeks later, my son drank a lot of water for the course of 5 days. There was no antidote. Is that the Humboldt current Pacific squid are, they've done a number of toxicity studies out there to find out that, in fact, whales have died as a result of eating too many highly toxic squid. I went back over my notes, recalled everybody and said, have any studies been done on the Atlantic squid? And the answer was no. Nobody, at least 6 years ago, had done any even straightforward, simple toxicity studies. So I would be careful, as with the Gulf of Maine warming, the East Coast waters warming, and as we look for, commercial fishing and more consumption of squid, that some serious toxicity studies have been done, if they haven't already.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Any of our panelists hear anything about toxicity? Of course, it's probably rather unusual to eat that many squid, but what do you know about that? Have they studied any of it? Okay, seems to be a mystery on that. So another area that I guess has some more potential. Thank you for sharing that, John. But speaking of eating, we just have a few minutes left. I was curious if each of you study squid. Does it make you not want to eat them, or does it make you want to eat them? And if so, how do you like to prepare them? Owen.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried them a lot of different ways. My favorite is probably baked stuffed in marinara sauce, but I'm still making some tweaks on that recipe. I feel as a seafood choice in general, it's a fairly sustainable one to make. I do choose to eat seafood, and because they are relatively short-lived, the risk of bioaccumulation of metals and things like that is relatively low compared to other seafood. There's a lot of great reasons to eat squid if you're going to choose to eat seafood. And I do choose to eat them myself.
Is it particularly nutritious? Is there something about squid that, that is good for you?
You know, that's a great question. You know, in terms of nutritional content, I do think they're fairly nutritious, but I'm not actually sure how they rank relative to, some of the other things that I like to eat anyway. But I've always understood them to be fairly nutritious. Yeah.
Right. Michelle, what's your go-to for eating squid?
First, I just wanted to follow up to say that my lab has started to do some energetic analyses of different forage fish, and squid actually rank pretty highly in terms of the number of calories that they deliver per unit weight. They're also relatively high in protein. And we always try to look at the relative value of a prey species to other species. And so that we have seen the nutritional value of some prey fish decline over the last few decades. We believe this has to do with changes in their growth rates and the food resources that they're consuming, which are further down the food chain. So species like sand lance and herring have actually been decreasing in their nutritional value. And so squid has become nutritionally equivalent, even greater than some of these other prey fish that many species and humans rely on within our region. So I'm a pescatarian, but I, as Owen said, I also choose to eat fish. And I agree that squid are a sustainable choice. There is a trade-off, though, that we, and I really appreciated the comments from some of our callers today. There is a trade-off where if we develop a commercial fishery for these species, we are taking biomass out of the ocean that supports other commercially important fish species. So squid do provide an ecosystem service just by being in the ocean and helping support the growth and health of other species. But if I had to choose, I would have grilled squid or calamari with horseradish sauce.
Jessica, 1 second to tell me your favorite.
I'm calamari, or calamari is always my top choice, but I feel like I need to expand.
Okay, I agree with you. Well, thank you all for joining us today. Our panelists are Michelle Staudinger with the University of Maine Darling Marine Center, Owen Nichols is with the Center for Coastal Studies, and Jessica Blaylock with NOAA Fisheries. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk with astronomy experts about what to look for in the night sky. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.